Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
Just speaking for me, I feel like, you know, it's just my duty, not necessarily my duty, but for me, I want to stay and I want to finish the season out. I want to finish what I started. I came here to compete for a season, and that's what I'm going to do. At the end of the day, I feel like, man, I've gone to work week in and week out, you know, with these guys for 10 straight games, and, you know, why stop on the 11th? So it's just something for me, my pride and just being able to go out there, and I owe it to these guys. I owe it to Coach Pittman, all the guys that have been able to just welcome me into the program and just help me take care of my body when I first got here. Just being able to owe that to them and go out here and try to get a big-time win. It's just a great opportunity, man. It means a lot to me as a person, as a player, just being a part of this program. You know, it's bigger than me, and I think – you know, faster that you can realize that you know, the picture is bigger than you, that the better things off will be. So
if Felipe had decided the opposite, I don't think I would get on here on these sports radio airwaves, hitthatline.com, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch, and go in on him and rip him or anything like that, because we've seen him persevere through several injuries already this season. But when he does make this decision, I mean, you think about this impact that this is going to have on this football team, that a guy that could get in preparation, like we've seen from Rakeem Boyd, for the NFL draft, for the upcoming NFL combine that he's expected to be at and participate at, this speaks volumes to what he has been for this football team in 2020.
Well, I'm not saying you, but I think the average fan would be okay with it, because they feel like KJ Jefferson still gives you a chance to compete in the bowl. If your quarterback or a player leaves you and you have no plan, no backup at all that's serviceable, then you go to that other emotion. You start ripping and you're mad because now your team's left with no plan at all at that position. And the quarter, you can't win without a quarterback. So if your quarterback opts out, which is the new term this year now, and you don't have a backup that can compete at the level that gives you a chance to win, I think you do have a different reaction. If you're Arkansas, you know, based on what you saw in the Missouri game, you feel like you'd still have a chance to go out and have an offense that you could put on the field that gives you a chance to win with Jefferson or Franks.
Let me just toss this out there. Do you think that KJ Jefferson would give them a better chance to win than TCU? Because we've had some listeners, some fans,
you can make the case,
that have called into this program and said that. But what do you think? Make the case that KJ Jefferson gives you a better chance to beat the TCU Horned Frogs.
A healthy KJ Jefferson. Let me tag
That's
it.
Probably
with that
a good preface. Yeah,
we assume he is on the path to healthiness. We know he's got a knee or a leg. Some kind of leg problem there. But who do you think is the – now, Franks has racked up some yards, so it's hard to sit here and say who's the better runner, but who would you rather have running the ball? Who would you rather
KJ.
Have?
You'd no
rather
question.
Have KJ. I think there's no question about that. But you look at Franks' numbers running the ball this year, and we know what he's been able to do compared to recent years of quarterbacks running the ball. But who would you rather have throwing the ball, though? I think I'd probably rather have Franks, right?
It's not even a question.
Not even a question.
You shouldn't even hesitate
right.
on that.
So, I mean, we know particularly the deep ball that Felipe's much better at that. So
KJ still has accuracy issues. We saw in the Missouri game.
Right.
He had great statistics at the end, and I know they scored the most points they have all season. Look at his stats, though. It's not even close to what Felipe has been completion percentage-wise so far in 2020.
I guess it'd come down to, where do you think TCU is more vulnerable, running or throwing? And that would be something that, and I don't know that I necessarily have the answer to, but if I really felt like you could run the ball better, that'd be how I'd construct my argument, you know, for KJ. You know, here's a guy that can run the ball better on a defense that's going to give up more run, you know. So that's how I'd look at it.
You don't sound confident in like ushering in that potential.
No, because I think you, when you look at experience and you probably look at more confidence, Felipe Franks should have that because he's taken more snaps this year. There's less that's going to be thrown at him that he hadn't seen and already dealt with this year.
They're 25th in rushing defense and 52nd in passing defense.
Mm. You'd probably rather have a guy that's throwing it, right?
I just...
Now, that might be a byproduct of the Big 12, too.
Listen, here's my take on this. And I know KJ played extremely well in the Missouri game. This is not even a conversation. Mm-hmm. Who would you rather have? Like, I know I asked you to make the point. There's no point to be made, period. End of story. You would rather have Felipe, and you could say, well, Ty, he's better. I'll give you that. KJ Jefferson is the better runner. But based on what you've seen this weekend, or excuse me, this season, relative to one game, which I guarantee you, Missouri had no idea. No idea. All of a sudden, they have a new quarterback in. I mean, Felipe, for goodness sakes, is going through the warm-up drills.
Yep.
They have no reason to believe that he's not going to play. You got a new quarterback, and all of a sudden, you have to completely game plan your changes 100%. Now, I know the offensive system under Kendall Briles is the same, but they run different intricacies based on who's at quarterback. And so I couldn't tell you who Missouri's DC is off the top of my head. That's changed. This is not a debate at all. Felipe, if he's healthy and going to protect, it's not even close that he needs to start and finish this game against TCU. Again, I asked you to make the case. It wasn't very strong of a case because it shouldn't be that strong of a case.
And
period.
The case would be, you know, in the Big 12, they do what more? They throw it more than they run it. I mean, that's just the nature of the Big 12. So I probably, you know, want my more experienced quarterback that's dealt with defensive schemes that are going to be set up to deal with the passing offenses in there more, and that's Franks.
Got a question in here from Andy in Mountain Home asking, if KJ Jefferson truly gave them the best chance to BCU, do you think Sam Pitt would start him? If that was the case, I still don't think he would based on Felipe, but as you and I just mentioned, we don't think that's the case, so we don't have to entertain that.
I'd still be surprised if you didn't see both of these quarterbacks in this bowl game.
But we can't watch what happened against Alabama where Felipe has his second drive, leaves them all the way down the red zone, they get a field goal, and then the rhythm changes when KJ's inserted. If you're going to do it, you got to do it the right times. I don't know when those are, but you can't do what you get against Alabama because it didn't work.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Grant Morgan is a Burlsworth finalist, along with Dax Malin, and Jimmy Morrissey. Here was what Grant Morgan had to say yesterday about being a finalist.
That would mean the world to me, just because that's the story that we've heard growing up. That's the story that coming here, like, you wanted to be that next guy. You wanted to be the next, like, Brandon Burlsworth story of the story of being a walk-on to being team captain, being drafted. Like, that's just what you want to do. So that's what you fight for. That's what I've really pushed for, and that's what I've tried to be. Everyone always says living the life the Burls way, but it's just, like, that's the way people should live their life. They live just being nice to people. They live being a good leader. They live just good on and off the field. So it's just, it's an honor to be up for this award, and hopefully you have a chance to win it. The Burlsworth family, they're a great family. Everything they do for Arkansas and the way they are in contact with everybody. So it's really cool to be up for this, and especially an honor for our team too. And I'd love to be the first one to win it from Arkansas.
It would be pretty cool to see Grant Morgan and everything come full circle with his brother, under-recruited, has a great career at Arkansas. Talking about Drew, and then now when he started out as a walk-on and now is the second leading tackler in all of college football, and is two at this point. I couldn't tell you much about the BYU kid or the Pitt kid. I just know that Grant Morgan is at least deserving of being a finalist when it comes to this trophy.
I mean, just reading through the email that came out from the Burlsworth Foundation yesterday and reading through what Milne and Morrissey have done at Pitt and BYU, I don't see how Grant Morgan doesn't win this award, honestly. First team All-SEC. the 111 tackles. I mean, his resume seems to outpower those other two. So
you would think that that would be something you think. And I know I started this.
I would be shocked if he doesn't win this.
I hope that you're correct on this. So Grant Morgan, awesome for him. Also, all awesome for the Burlesworth family that a Razorback has made it this far. So really excited to see when that, and that announcement is the second. Or the third, they're doing it via Zoom. I know they usually have that presentation.
Right, virtual this year, yeah, like so many other things.
It's early January. I couldn't tell you the exact date, but it is early January.
We'll email up, but that's close enough. It is early January.
Correct. Hopefully Grant ends up winning that award. We mentioned the All-SEC teams earlier where Arkansas has seven guys make a selection. Jalen Catalon, second team All-SEC, along with Bumper Pool and Traylon Burks. We mentioned Grant being the first team or the lone first teamer All-SEC. And then you have Jalen Catalon, Brady Latham, and Hudson Henry, all a part of the all-freshman team. Now, these awards were voted on by the coaches when it comes to that position, those positions.
Yep. And, you know, obviously the numbers speak for themselves. And the what Grant did this year, those his stats playing injured, and I don't know how much, you know, when these coaches are factoring that in, I don't know how much, you know, you play Arkansas, you know what's going on when that week as you play them. And not every coach, not every team played Arkansas this year. You know, if you knew the whole story, I guess, with Grant Morgan, pretty impressive to know, you know, that elbow was injured. He essentially played with one arm a lot of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that makes, to me, what happened and what he did this year even more impressive.
And he's also a part of Pro Football Focus's All-SEC first team, along with Jonathan Marshall and Jalen Catalon. Those are more the statistics. We saw that Jalen and we saw that Jonathan both had great statistics from the analytics standpoint from Pro Football Focus. Did you watch any of the NBA last night? I watched the Brooklyn Nets demolish the Golden State Warriors for a little bit, but the NBA is back. I know it's kind of snuck up on us a little bit.
I watched the Arkansas game. I was over at Joe's, watched some of that, most of that there, then finished it at home. And then Missouri played Bradley right after that, and it was just kind of on the TV.
It's a good game. They Missouri edged out by one. So
I didn't really watch that. It was just kind of on. And I didn't watch the NBA, but honestly, I didn't watch the NBA when it wrapped up, you know, seems like 3 weeks ago. Didn't watch a lot of it then.
It has come at us fast. So speaking of basketball, Arkansas did get the win last night against Abilene Christian, 85-72. No Eric Musselman. He was quarantined due to contact tracing within the basketball program. The timeline of him being out, I would anticipate he's not going to be available for the Auburn game unless he has several negative tests. We'll just have to wait and see when it comes to his status for your opening SEC game. And that's going to do it for your quickie headlines here on the Morning Rush. And we will get into the Auburn conversation. They got their guy. What number was he on the list? That's the conversation we're going to get to next here.
Hey, Merry Christmas from your friends at Trinity Multifamily. If you're tired of your noisy neighbors or you're looking to upgrade your apartment for 2021, if you're looking for a duplex or a townhome or a new apartment complex with all the latest amenities, whether it's Northwest Arkansas, the River Valley, Central Arkansas, Tulsa, Kansas City, Dallas, really doesn't matter. Trinity Multifamily manages thousands of units in communities near you and in states far away. They've got a new place for you to call home waiting on you. 479-452-1817. That's 479-452-1817. Or look online and use their easy search tool at trinitymultifamily.com. Merry Christmas from Trinity Multifamily, your teammate in the real estate game.
Your thoughts on Auburn filling their head coaching position? Brian Harsin, the former Boise State head coach, that's his alma mater. He coached at Arkansas State for a little bit. What are your thoughts on what's going down in the Plains? 877-377-6963. Now, he's a pretty good winning percentage overall, 760. He's 76-24 throughout his career, had a 75 season in Arkansas State, and then has had several, five to be exact, double-digit win seasons at Boise State. And he talked about how he couldn't pass up this opportunity because it's very hard, Tommy, to pluck a coach away from their alma mater.
I guess, you know, some ties there between him and Malzahn, both Arkansas State. Eli Drinkowitz worked with Harsin too at Boise State before he went to NC State as their offensive coordinator, and then he went to App State. Now he's obviously at Missouri. So There's some connections that some names you might know with Drinkwitz there as well that worked with Harsin. So obviously there were some other names they went after. They needed to get a guy. They needed to get their name. I guess the first question is, Brian Harsin a better coach than Gus Malzahn? I mean, that's the first thing you
have to
ask yourself.
You have to ask, you know, that, yeah.
The little birdies are telling me Gus was out here playing golf at Ben Guerin yesterday. You know, is the coach that's out here playing, you know, at Willow and Silo better than the guy you just hired? You know, I'm not sure. But, you know, in the SEC, you make an 8, 9, 10-year run. The fan base, the administration, everybody's heard all your sermons, the donors, the you know, everybody's heard it all. And it's hard to survive 8, 9, 10 years anymore. It's amazing what Houston Nutt did, making it 10 years at Arkansas. He ran his course. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that Gus isn't the better coach. But sometimes just change is inevitable to reinvigorate and re-energize a program. Can Harsin do that? And that's really the question, because as we know, the boosters run the show at Auburn, and are the boosters satisfied with what they got with Harsin?
And we mentioned that a little bit yesterday. It's got to be so aggravating and frustrating for a head football coach, and Gus Malzahn had to deal with it for years, when people who don't have a fingernail's worth of football acumen compared to you think they should have more say in
the
football decision.
They like the power of the influence.
Yeah, and Arkansas has a little bit of that too. It's what got you Chad Morris, mm-hmm. because you had a bunch of boosters and a bunch of big-time guys that thought, hey, this is going to be our guy.
They tried to get Gus, couldn't get Gus, and now you look back on it a few years later and you wonder, you know, does Gus wish he'd have actually taken Arkansas up on the reported $49 million offer, and he'd probably still be here and not, you know, playing golf at Ben Guerin.
And, yeah, it was funny yesterday because Lance came in and told me the story that the guy that met Gus at the register didn't recognize him at first, and he was like, yeah, I got to force him playing it. Four or whatever he said, and he's like, I'll just pay for all four. And the guy was like, all right, that's gonna be like $200. And then he gets his credit card that says Gus Malzahn. It's like, oh, he can afford it with the $11 million buyout he's got coming his way
before then,
that he's got coming in the next 30 days. But when it comes to the conversation about Gus Malzahn and Chad Morris, the fiasco that happened with Arkansas, because we can talk about coaching searches fiasco, making fun of Auburn, making fun of Tennessee, you just had one 2 years ago. And you almost had one with Sam Pittman. Now, Sam Pittman seems to be your guy at this point, but the coaching search did not go according to plan, if you ask a lot of people. Here's what happened in the second coaching search. Now, Hunter Yurcheck was kind of a lame duck in the first one. He technically okayed Morris, but he didn't really okay Morris. The deal was already done by the time he really got to campus. This last one, you got to remember, it was him and John Fagg. No one knew what was going on, correct, like at all. And so you got these big time Arkansas boosters who are used to being the big wigs walking in the room with their cowboy boots and their belt buckles and their big cash. And they're like, we want to send. Honey, Yurcheck just basically gave him the bird. He's like, I'm the freaking athletic director. I'm going to hire who I want to hire. And that's what needs to happen in these coaching. So if an athletic director's job is solely placed on the football coach's success, which it is basically everywhere outside of like Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, and some other big time basketball schools, then you better, as an AD, get the guy that you want. You don't want to be forced upon someone, him screw up, and then you be left with the, oh, your football coach, air quotes around that, gets fired. So I'm curious, Alan Green, I think, is the athletic director, correct, at Auburn. Is that his guy? Is Brian Harsin truly his guy? And the answer, like you're saying, is absolutely not.
No, I mean, obviously they had two or three other candidates in mind, and if Harsin was their guy, he'd have been hired days ago. You know, he'd been hired the 16th when the early signing period began. So absolutely, this is, you know, a similar situation. But then this does not mean it can't work out.
No.
This does not mean Auburn can't have success. This does not mean Auburn can't return to beating Alabama. This does not mean that Auburn can't win the West with Harsin. It doesn't mean the energy around Auburn football can't be reinvigorated under Brian Harsin. So don't confuse the perceived lack of success in the coaching search for the pending doom of their next three or four seasons. Because if that was the case, Arkansas shouldn't have what we perceive as a trend in the right direction with its program after one season with Sam Pittman.
Because right? You went, what, 0 for Leach, 0 for Kiffin, right. 0 for...
Those are the main two. I mean, those but are the two everybody talks about.
And that's true, but there were some guys that wouldn't even hear you out, well, right?
Barry Lunny was the other one that was the name in the mix, but that's really... But Leach and Kiffin are the
He
are the
wanted
targets.
The job. Like, Lunny right. would do... Lunny would crawl back, and I still think there's a good shot in 10 or so years when Sam Pittman's time has come to an end. Hopefully that it lasts that long. We'll see that Lunny Jr. eventually comes back. Lunny Jr. was not ready for this job. You weren't. I mean, at he's 30-something years old?
No. He's 2 years older than me.
Is he so, really?
Yeah.
I see. He holds it pretty well then, even though he's bald. He was, in my opinion, he wasn't ready for this job. I think you had to have success, and I think that's what... I think you got to go
46 or so.
You got to go somewhere else and have success. And I mean, give you a great example. We're getting this text in from Brian talking about Houston Nutt, who thinks Harsin is a good hire because the last Boise State coach that moved to the SEC had 3 championships, SEC appearances in 10 years. And he's talking about Houston Nutt. To your point, just because the coaching search didn't go like a lot of Auburn boosters and Alan Green planned doesn't mean it can't pan out. Yeah. But as you mentioned, I truly wonder, does the guy that was playing golf yesterday at Ben Garin Park here in Arkansas, we're talking about Gus Malzahn, is he a lesser coach than Brian Harsin? Brian Harsin has had success at Arkansas State and Boise State, the Sun Belt and the Mountain West.
Harsin hadn't had a chance to prove it yet.
And that's true. That's fair. But we have another text in here talking about Corey and Rogers saying Brett Bielema, ask Brett Bielema what it's like to move to the SEC. Some guys, Morris, Bielema, some guys just aren't cut out for this conference.
Harsin's success or failure at Auburn will be based on one thing and one thing only. Well, two things. First and foremost, 80% of it will be this. Can he recruit? If he can't get the recruits in there, if he can't get the 4- and 5-star guys, he won't succeed. Secondly, can he build a staff? If he can't get 2 big-time coordinators and he can't get the players, he won't make it. And that's not exclusive to him. That's not an exclusive situation at Auburn, right? So it still is going to come down to two things. Can he get quality coaches to be on his staff, and can they recruit? I mean, it's not hard to figure out what it takes to win, players and coaches. I mean, it's just that simple.
When you look at Auburn, they only had 11 players in this 2021 recruiting class that signed their national letter of intent. They've had a lot of decommits because they don't know who the next head coach. I wouldn't be committing to a university if I didn't know who the head coach is. Absolutely
would
not.
You sign up at a radio station that didn't have a general manager?
Absolutely not.
No.
The national rank right now for the Auburn Tigers is 41th. That's 12th in the Southeastern Conference. And they tend to be around the 4 or 5 mark every single year in the SEC. So they're well behind what they usually are. Now they still have a chance as it was just early signing day and the early signing period to recap and regroup and get together a good class. But you mentioned the recruiting part. If they don't shore up this class when Harsin gets in here and if he doesn't bring a pizzazz immediately to this football team, you know how difficult it is to already compete against Nick Saban week in, week out when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to just overall. It's going to be even more difficult if you're a recruiting class behind for Brian Harsin. Brian Harsin, again, good football coach. 5 double-digit win seasons at Boise State. But we know that Boise State in the Mountain West Conference is nothing compared to Auburn in the SEC West and in the same state as the best football coach of all time.
All right, those are your quick hitting headlines. They're brought to you by Joe's Grill and Cantina. They've got their Saturday sipping brunch menu. You can get out after Christmas and enjoy cocktails and a Saturday brunch menu from 10 to 2. Start off your weekends on Saturdays with breakfast burritos. You can have their breakfast frittata. They got a a brisket frittata that is just unbelievable, where they take some of their brisket, chop it up, and put it in there with some eggs. It is great. They got mimosas, screwdrivers, Bloody Marys. Great way to get your Saturday going. They open at 10. They got the regular menu plus this brunch menu in addition to that till 2 o'clock. So it's a great way to start every Saturday at Joe's Grill and Canteen. It's something new. You're going to love it. It's the Saturday Sipping Brunch Menu at Joe's Grill and Cantina. A great way to kick off the weekends. 10 to 2 every Saturday at Joe's Grill and Cantina, 3400 South 74th Street across from Harps.
Real quick, let's touch on this Dan Mullen news. So the Florida football program violated NCAA recruiting rules. You can probably diagnose and speak to this better than I can, just seeing this yesterday.
I just saw and just have read what I've read on the internet, saw it come across the crawl during the game yesterday that Dan Mullen was given a one-year show cause. He's been giving some recruiting bans, and some of that into 2020, which, you know, is back.
For those
dates
who don't know what a show cause, explain to people what a show cause
is. It, generally, that's for a coach that's been fired or is out, and you got to show cause as to why you can hire that coach, but he's already in place. Now, the hardest, it's kind of weird to have a show cause for a coach that's sitting in a job, so I'm not sure what the real punishment is there. So I'm assuming if he's let go from this job, I need some more explanation, because generally that's for a coach that's on the shelf, on the beach. The hardest punishments are there's some periods that are active periods that him and his staff are not going to be able to recruit for a week during active periods coming up in 21, and then he's not going to be able to leave campus some in 21 to do active recruiting. And they can't go to Seattle. So apparently whatever the problem is revolves around a program in Seattle. I knew there were some things going on, but I didn't know it was this severe with Florida.
And we still got the what's going to shake out with the Tennessee stuff in Knoxville. There seemingly is like a rat or two in the Vols program trying to get Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, it's just a wild couple of last days for the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the SEC hadn't had a lot of issues, and now it's just like,
Bunch of them heading back and forth. So the Auburn news, the Florida news, the Tennessee news. I mean, we've talked about the LSU news with the...
And then, you know, LSU cleaned house yesterday with their staff.
Yep. And
like everybody.
Steve Ensminger, we hadn't talked about this. He is reportedly, I don't remember if he said that or if it was just reported, but he's not going to return. And Scott Linehan, who's their passing game coordinator, former Dallas Cowboys OC, is not going to return either. So Ed Orgeron is going to have to assemble staff and fast, because that team, while they ended strong, still nowhere near the expectations of the Tigers fan base.
All coordinators gone. I mean, it's, you know, starting from scratch. I mean, so you know what happens next if it didn't go well?
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
As we go to the phone lines and welcome in Josh Pate of 24/7 Sports. Josh, I do want to touch on some recruiting stuff with you later on, but with so much SEC news, man, breaking yesterday, I want to start there. Your initial thoughts on Brian Harsin to the Auburn Tigers?
Well, my first thought was, I thought I had carved out some time for myself to actually drive home. And Auburn picked the exact time that I chose to drive home to make a hire. So that was a fun time driving home yesterday, trying to listen to how many times the cell phone was going to ping. So the first thought was it was out of left field. Everyone I had talked to around the search, and no one had heard that name. Some people involved in the search, no one had mentioned that name. So, you know, I understand the need to want to pitch this idea out there and promote the messaging that, well, this was our first choice, and that happens all the time. Well, that wasn't the case here. And, in fact, it wouldn't surprise me if this name wasn't even on the radar when the search began, contrary to what people may say. Now, that doesn't matter if he ends up being a good hire.
Mm-hmm.
So, next question is, obviously, is he a good hire? I don't know, because I don't think it's possible to know there, because I don't even... It's impossible to even know if the factors are going to be in place that turned off a lot of other guys from that job. I don't know that it's so much even up to Brian Harsin as to whether he's going to succeed. Now, if that's not the case, or if that's been overblown and it's just how good a football coach is he, you got a shot there. And I'm not really of the opinion that it's going to matter a whole lot, or it's going to be 100% detrimental that he doesn't have a whole lot of SEC ties and that he's not familiar with the recruiting landscape here. It would greatly behoove him to fit those descriptions. But also, well, you know, we've seen a guy like Urban Meyer, for example. I remember when Urban came into the league, not to compare these situations, but I remember when Urban came into the league, and I remember everyone down here thinking, this league's about to show him something, and it was the opposite. He showed the league something. He changed the league, and he didn't have any experience down here. Dude had never even set foot in the SEC. So it can happen. I just don't automatically recoil at that notion when you've got to at least credit Auburn for going and finding a really good football coach, and that's what they claim to have been looking for all along. So I'm certainly willing to give it a shot and hope for the best with him.
Josh, you're bringing some excellent points. When Urban was at Utah and then he came to Florida, there was a lot of people questioning, would his spread offense work in this conference? We saw it did, and then some. But to your point about Brian Harsin, Gus Malzahn was playing golf yesterday in the city where we broadcast in, man. So, and the question that Tommy and I have been asking our listeners this morning, is Brian Harsin a better coach than Gus Malzahn? You're having to pay $21 million to get him out, and that's the question I'll put to you. We don't know yet at this point, but if Harsin ends up being a lesser coach than Malzahn, how bad does this decision look for the Auburn fan base and the boosters down there, man?
Well, it looks bad if he's as good a coach as Gus Malzahn. Yeah. Forget
that's a good
lesser
point.
Coach. It looks as bad, if not worse, if it's just a trade-off period. And to answer your question, I have no idea. I know that's not a popular response, but to speak in definitive, no, I don't think he is a definitive upgrade. And that should be the underlying criteria, unless there's scandal involved, which there's never been a whiff of with Malzahn, by the way. Unless there's scandal involved, there should never be a change made at the head coaching position in the SEC or elsewhere unless you have a definitive upgrade. It's the only question I ever used to ask folks. If you've got a problem with your head coach, I don't have a problem with you making a move. It's your program. You handle it how you want to. But I'd have Auburn fans by the truckload come in the comment section and whatnot and DM me and email me every week. We got to get rid of Malzahn. Do you? Okay, well, that sounds great. Who do you have that's an upgrade? And the response was always either some name out of left field that they had no shot at, or, well, I don't know, but we can do better than him.
Yeah.
Well, the same folks, and I'm telling you right now because I can go back and find the receipt, some of the same folks who were in those emails and in those DMs telling me one thing about Malzahn and telling me how they felt about how they had to get rid of him are sure enough now of the opinion that I don't know if we just upgraded. Yeah. I don't know if this guy's even better than Malzahn.
Yeah.
So you got to be really careful what you risk for, because there's this big misconception in major college football that if you have average results, it can only go up. Yeah. And that's not true. There's just as much room to go down as there is to go up when you got average results.
Yeah. You know, Josh, I'm a believer your success in this division and in the business in general is based on basically two things: coaches and recruits. I mean, you got to get players, and you got to have a staff. And any idea who Harsin will fill these vital coordinator roles with, and who he will hire to fill those 10 spots with? Because that's going to, you know, ultimately decide his success or failure at Auburn is who he hires as coaches, and can those coaches get players?
Yeah, you're right. So I talked to some people last night about Brian Harsin, the recruiter. And to be honest with you, you got some very mixed messages. I don't know the guy. I've never met the guy personally. I had not, before last night, ever thought about how Brian Harsin can recruit. So this is a new thought for all of us, I guess, down here. The answer to that, so this is going to be really popular during this call. The answer to the staffing question is, I don't know, but there's a caveat to the answer. First thing we have to do is we have to find out if there are going to be any mandates within his agreement to having to keep guys on staff. Mm-hmm. But if you talk to folks close to Billy Napier, and you talk to folks close to Bill Clark, and maybe a couple others that were or weren't on the public's radar that had a look at this job, they were turned off by the notion that was put in their head by Auburn powers that be that there were going to be a couple of prerequisites staffing-wise that they were going to have to sign off on or agree to. And it was going to involve people either being retained or guys being put on their staff. And that's not going to fly with most legitimate coaches. Now, either Brian Harsin agreed to those terms or Auburn got desperate, said this is not going to work, no one's going to agree to this, and they changed those terms. And if that's the case, and the guy's hiring his own staff, then it's ball game, or it's a game on, I guess. Not ball game, it's game on at that point. I do not know. I've seen a lot of names thrown around. I don't know which direction he wants to go.
So should be an interesting follow. Let's go a little bit further south. Let's go to Gainesville, Florida for the next conversation. As the hammer came down yesterday on Dan Mullen, you look at the show calls order that was put on them, the recruiting violations that have been circulating around this program. What does this really mean for Dan Mullen and his staff, what was announced yesterday with what will be prohibitive for them moving forward?
I don't know that it's a massive deal. You know, there's a very sadistic side of me that almost thought to myself, you know what? All right, then. And not to celebrate it, certainly not. But the big criticism around Florida, as well, short of maybe a time or two this year, it's not been really lack of a ton of discipline, and it's not been a lack of schematic edge over the opponent. It's been recruiting. It's been the fact that they're not in the same arena as Georgia. Now, you don't want to participate in outright scandal in order to prove you're in that arena. But inevitably, when you do get in that arena, you're going to scuff your knees a time or two. You're going to get popped on the wrist a time or two. And one of the sure signs sometimes that someone is looking to get in that arena is they're not 100% clean in terms of their recruiting profile anymore. Like, there will be these types of headlines every now and then. But at the same time, you start to see the roster improve. And so it's just one of those things. It's not a fun headline to see. If you're a Florida Gator fan, you hate it. You know, if you cover the SEC, you hate it. But there's this strange pill sometimes that you have to swallow in college football to understand, all right, well, you can either be 2-10, or you can be 6-6, or you can start to flirt with those big boy numbers. And, you know, maybe, you know, once or twice every few years you have some of these headlines. You got to decide, and it's each man and woman for him or herself. You got to decide how big a deal you really think it is. I'm not too turned off by it. I'm also not of the opinion that 5 years from now, we're going to look back at these sanctions and say, boy, Florida's roster, it's terrible now. And it is a perfect reflection of what happened 5 years ago.
Yeah. We were really hoping this morning we could report that Dan Mullen had won SEC Coach of the Year. And then in the next headline, the sanctions that had come down on him as well. So we were really hoping that would be really juicy this morning. Coach of the Year has also been given a show cause order. So that would have been nice.
That's the way the documentary is supposed to work. Yes, sometimes exactly. It doesn't work out that way.
Josh Pate, 24/7 Sports with us here on The Morning Rush. Josh, let's continue on with this SEC conversation. Also some news that's been breaking, not just this week, but this past week, LSU letting go of Bo Pelini. Steve Ensminger is now going to retire. Didn't look like they were going to retain Scott Linehan. If you're Ed Orgeron coming off a really, really tumultuous season where the expectations were far, that were not even close to being met, what's your opinion of what's going down in Baton Rouge right now, 1 year following a national championship?
Well, it's been a mess on many different fronts. Some you can control because some just have to do with the football field or your coaching staff, et cetera. So you control all those. There's some other fronts that maybe you had the ability to control at one point, but once things happened, that stuff's out of your control. Title IX and whatnot, and you know, investigations into domestic violence. I mean, all those sorts of things. You don't put that toothpaste back in the tube, and you don't go buy a new tube either. So strictly if we're talking football, it's got to be pretty humbling. If you're Orgeron, well, I would think it should be. It should be humbling. If you make a move on a guy like Dave Aranda, who you won a championship with, and then you hire Bo Pelini, and you're very vocal in the offseason. This is probably the biggest thing that caught my ear over the summer. And I talked about it at the time, kind of stored it away in the back of my head for future reference, was Bo Pelini coming in and Ed Orgeron finding the nearest microphone at every opportunity he could to say, we're way better defensively now. And there was nothing you ever saw on the football field this year that would ever have led you to believe that there was anything he could have seen in practice to warrant that. So it really wasn't football he was looking at. It was just spite that was fueling him. Whatever the deal was between he and Aranda, I can assure you there was nothing about Bo Pelini or his product that was put on the field that would ever lead any sane person to believe that the product was upgraded. Mm. And not only that, the guy was bringing home, I think the number was around $46,000 a week to coach that. Not a year, but a week, doing it every week and getting run up and down the field on. So at least they cut bait, and at least they understood this is not going to work. Now, the hiring situation is interesting because you got to keep in mind, I mean, you got to find guys who want to come there, and you are going to be able to pay a lot of money to have guys come there, mm-hmm. and that's great. You're going to need to be able to do that because I can tell you the talk in the coaching world is one of a lot of uneasiness and a lot of speculation about how tenable the situation is at LSU, how thin the ice may be and how hot the blades on top of that ice may be with the off-the-field, non-football-related stuff. And essentially what you're trying to sell potential candidates is you're trying to sell stability. And it's going to be hard to sell stability to potential coaching candidates if you're Ed Orgeron, which means you're either going to have to cross some guys off your list or you're going to have to overpay.
Josh, before we let you go, you had a lot of positive things to say about this Arkansas recruiting crop last week on during early national signing period, and it was you and Barton Simmons talking about, it's like, hey, you just look up, and Arkansas's at 20, kind of like this season after a few wins they picked in. What are your takes overall on this Arkansas recruiting class and what Sam Pittman can build on this class moving forward?
I think it's ultra impressive. I mean, they're sitting there. So currently – they're, I think, as of 2 days ago, they were number 20 in our overall team rankings. And it is exactly as you said. That's how it struck me. We were on, we did 8 hours live. And so about halfway through that, I'm scrolling through that thing and I say, wait a second. Why have we not talked about Arkansas? We've talked about some teams ranked below them. I mean, Auburn was 20 spots below them. We had done entire segments on Auburn, but they got some guys and they understand the challenge in front of them. Okay. I am, as many people are, of the opinion they overachieved this year relative to the talent roster they had compared to some of the teams they played. But, I mean, when you talk about just a guy like Ketron Jackson, for example, that's a guy who has offers from a lot of places. I mean, that's a guy who can go play at a lot of places. And if you think about the highest-rated kids in their class, typically you would think if Arkansas had a high signing class, they must have just loaded up on offensive linemen. Well, they got a couple of pretty highly rated offensive tackles, but I'll tell you what else they have. The top three, as I remember it, that I looked at were all athletes. Mm-hmm. The top three rated kids there. And so I what you think Arkansas football may be in the future versus what Arkansas football will be in the future, that may be two different things. And when I say you, I mean outsiders. You guys are following the team. But outsiders think, well, they'll just 3 yards in the cloud of dust it for better or for worse. I don't think that's what they're going to do. There will certainly always be a physical element to that team. But when you think about Green or Sanders or Jackson, those top kids they signed, no, man, they're looking to play right with you. If they need to trade points any given Saturday, they want to be able to trade points with you. So I'd be very excited if I was an Arkansas fan.
Josh Pate, the National Director of Video at 24/7 Sports. You can watch him at the Late Kick YouTube channel. Make sure you do that. Josh, really appreciate your time this morning, man. Enjoy the Christmas holiday, and hopefully we'll catch up to you in 2021.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate it.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time we're coming for the whole damn thing.
And I mentioned Arkansas basketball with Eric Musselman. No muss yesterday. Yeah. He tested, member tested
positive. Well, sort of no muss. He was one of the broadcasters.
He was. Jimmy Dykes and Tom Hart were talking with him for a good portion of the first half. He said a member tested positive for COVID-19 and all those considered close contacts, including Eric Musselman, are now following quarantine guidelines. The good thing is, like Arkansas football, we had Barry Odom as former head coach. You have two head coaches on this team. You have David Patrick, who assumed that role yesterday, and you also have Corey Williams. Muss is still going to be a part of these meetings virtually, but now I wonder, as you get closer and closer to your first SEC game against the Auburn Tigers, which I would anticipate he is not going to be available for based on what we heard from him and based on what we know about the guideline of rules. Now you start at SEC play without your head basketball coach.
he'd be better off to get it, right? I mean, and you hate to take that stance, but he's from the timeline, the guidelines, him wanting to be with the team wanting him to be there, knowing his condition of health. I mean, a lot of people would say that. I mean, I don't think I'm being irresponsible with that statement, but, you know, I bet you he'd say that. He'd be better off to just get it over with. I mean, like, he came on this very radio show and said the majority of our team's already had it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's been fine. Majority of the staff's had it. Obviously, there's a few that haven't, that they're dealing with this still. The guidelines allow you to return faster if you're positive. When you're a contact trace, you're out longer. Now, they've changed a few of the guidelines. You can go get a negative test, 7 or 8 days in now. But, yeah, golly, you're right. I mean, this is going to drag on. Now, fortunately, you're in a period here, and you catch it where you got 8 days without a game. But getting ready for this game, the team's going to have a few days of downtime for Christmas. But, you know, you would love for him to be able to test at some point and be back with the team and ready to start conference play.
And saying that, and because I agree with your take that Muss would probably...
I mean, I know some people are going, oh, you can't say that you wish you had it. I mean, I guarantee you, if Musselman called in right now, he'd say, yeah, I wish I had it so I could get this thing behind us.
Especially before,
and not be worried about it.
Conference play. And I know this affects a lot of people differently, and we don't want to be inconsiderate, but that means... But I mean, I'm in the same line of thinking. First of all, I may have had it already. I have no idea.
Right.
I was in populated areas before the shutdown happened initially, so I could have gotten it there. Secondly, I've been tested twice. I don't want to have to go through that again. And, I mean, I'm a perfectly healthy 26-year-old. Now, again, I don't want to be inconsiderate. I know that there have been lives lost, and I know that it affects people in different ways. I would just be under the assumption that I might be sick for a little bit, but it wouldn't be over the top. So it's not...
He's in his late 56 or 8, but he's the healthiest up 50-something-year-old we know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, to that point, it's not an outlandish take for many, because a lot of people have said not that they're intentionally trying to get it, but they want to get it over with, right, so they can have the time period.
It's like a weight lifted off of you.
Yeah.
I mean, once you come through it, I mean, it's just like, okay, I don't have to worry about testing anymore. It's just one less worry that you have.
And I mean, if I did end up getting it, obviously I wouldn't want to affect my roommates or anyone here at the radio stations or anything like that. But as you mentioned, it would be kind of a weight off the shoulders. And I don't know. I didn't get the antibody test. I may have had it already. I don't know.
The antibody test doesn't clear you from getting tested they don't accept that as a positive test now. So...
I don't know. But back to the basketball game last night, you win 85-72, 8 straight games winning by double digits. Now, the competition has not been superb. It's going to pick up an SEC play. But one of the interesting notes that was pointed out during the broadcast yesterday is you have 5 guys that are averaging double figures. And that stands out because it hasn't necessarily been one guy all the way. Now, Moses Moody has averaged double figures every game this season, not average. He scored in double figures every single game, and he's really been the standout guy. There's a reason he's mocked in NBA drafts this next draft in the top 15 based on the way he plays. He is just a hellacious offensive rebounder. He is so physical. Him and Justin Smith get after it, which I really enjoy watching. But this offense right now is clicking for the most part, and it's not just one guy like it was last year in Mason Jones at times when Isaiah Joe went out. It's several dissonant guys. Desi Sills really got things kick-started yesterday, and then whether it was Moses Moody, JD Notte closing it out, there's just so many weapons on this basketball team, and that's why I think they're going to be mightily successful once SEC play rolls around.
Yeah, and I was reading, Muss was tweeting last night, and he was talking about I got it right here. Big discrepancy. This is Eric Musselman. Big discrepancy between the first and second half defensive performances. In the first half, we allowed 0.86 points per possession. In the second half, we allowed a whopping 1.22 points per possession. We must improve in SEC play. That's what he's doing out in the pool house, breaking down points per possession per half.
Yeah, he
He wasn't happy with the way they played defense in the second half, clearly.
You did out-rebound Abilene Christian. You've done that several times this season. I think there's only been one game thus far where you've been out-rebounded. You win that battle 39-28. And really, like I mentioned earlier, it's Moses Moody and Justin Smith getting after the offensive boards, which has been really fun to watch those guys. Now, Abilene Christian is really good at forcing you into turnovers. They came in this season averaging 24 forced turnovers game. Arkansas only had 13, and that was one of the things that Jimmy Tykes and Tom Hart mentioned, is for Arkansas to be where they are offensively, efficient-wise, not turning the ball over, they play an up-tempo style. They were talking about Virginia. They were talking about Wisconsin, who are the slower tempo, less turnover basketball team. Arkansas plays a fast-paced style and really hasn't turned the ball over much this season. That's going to bode well heading into SEC play.
Yeah. They look like a team that's going to be, I don't know a lot about the Southland, but I bet they're going to be a team that makes a good run at their tournament bid this year in the Southland.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.